This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
Good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab, hour two here. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And on the line, we have Ashley Zane from the CBIA. Are you there, Ashley?
I'm here.
And Ashley's on because there's a potential bill or idea from the Connecticut legislature that's going to be putting together a way to protect companies from lawsuits after they got breached if at least they tried to protect the data in the first place. Is that kind of correct?
Yeah, you're right on the money with that. So what this bill would do is it would provide an affirmative defense against civil liability, civil court, if you operate using certain frameworks based off of the size of your company, the complexity, the type of information that you have, and what tools you already are using.
Now, as far as there's going to be obviously a lot of talk about which frameworks they're going to use, the NIST framework was brought up as an option, NIST 800-171. There's ITAR, there's DFARS, there's all sorts of different frameworks that are out there for aerospace and others, HIPAA, PCI, you name it. There's tons of frameworks. Who's going to be putting this together? I mean, generally, I worry when it comes to the legislature putting this stuff together. But, you know, I'm not sure they understand how to use even email. We really need experts in the IT field and the security field that put this stuff together. And do you have any input on that, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is definitely going to rely on the cybersecurity industry and the people who are the experts to really make sure that these companies are using the correct framework. Like you said, there's NIST standards, there's FedRAMP security assessment frameworks, Center for Internet Security. So there's basically a lot of different frameworks that you can use, and it really is going to depend heavily on a good partnership with the industry.
How many lawsuits occur? Because if you're aware of this, the SolarWinds hack, were you aware of that issue?
Yeah.
Where the security tool designed to protect companies was used to get into them? How many companies get sued for their having their data breached? Is it a big number?
In terms of getting sued, I think not a huge number, but in terms of the amount of data breaches, there are quite a lot of data breaches, and they have increased
yes.
in the last year. And I think a lot of that is because we're starting to see people remote working from home. A lot of that is due to COVID, and I think a lot of that is going to stay moving forward.
Correct. But if there's not a lot of lawsuits, is this a law looking? Is this a bill looking for a reason? If you're not finding a lot of people getting sued because it's almost like a fact of life that your data is going to get breached. Heck, the government breaches our data all the time. You can buy the data. You know, you can. It's not even something that's protected that well. Is it really something that's needed? I'm all for it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just curious how big a problem this really is as far as being sued for having a data breach.
Yeah, I think for the first time, the legislature is being more proactive by bringing this bill out. So we're actually incentivizing businesses, because if you put these frameworks in place, you'll have this affirmative defense. Yep. So you have that immediate return on investment, where sometimes it's really hard to quantify the return on investment that you're getting from cybersecurity. So yes, this is a step the legislature is taking to incentivize these companies to really take a look at, beef up, and really make sure that they're protecting sensitive information.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you say that. I had a meeting with a dental prospect in Enfield yesterday, and the dentist said to me, actually it was Thursday, he goes, "So how am I going to make money with this, Eric?" I'm like, "I'm going to protect your company from failing and going down where you can't actually do your work." But he's like, "How can I make money on all this cyber stuff?" I'm like,
yeah, it's almost like buying a car insurance policy. You right. hope you never need it, but when it's there, you're really happy that you have it.
There's that. What about maybe some tax breaks, too? I mean, when you're talking about NIST 800-171 for manufacturers, when they're selling to government entities, believe it or not, NIST will actually tell the manufacturers, hey, the government will be happy to pay a little extra for that part if you put these securities in place. It's the government. They have a, you know, open checkbook. That's all well and good. But for making parts or selling pizzas or being a dentist, nobody's willing to pay you more because you've done your cybersecurity work. Is there a way for these companies maybe to get some sort of tax break on putting this stuff in? That usually helps companies consider things.
Yeah, we would love tax breaks, tax credits, deductions, the more the merrier in terms of what we're looking at. But I think given a lot of the budget issues surrounding it, I don't think the legislature is too keen on adding a fiscal note to this bill, especially given the deficits. So I think one of the pluses of this bill is there is no fiscal note attached. So the state isn't shelling out a lot of money, and therefore this is at least one thing they can do that doesn't cost the state money but might have a lot of added benefits for not only the state, who would then have to deal with all of these lawsuits and all of the ramifications surrounding that, but then the businesses also have some liability coverage.
Sounds good. Anything else we should know?
Just hopefully it'll pass, and anyone listening, if you call your legislator and urge their support of this bill, that would be greatly appreciated.
Is there a number on the bill?
It is 6607.
All right, very good. Ashley, thank you for being part of the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Very good. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, bye-bye. So cybersecurity is getting a little bit of proactive look here in Connecticut.
As well it should.
As well it should. If you recall, in the past on the show here, we talked about the Department of Motor Vehicles, right? They have there's an assessment or some sort of audit that's done by a third-party aspect of the government that for years was telling them they didn't have any backup or disaster recovery on their 40-year-old system. And then even after they put the new system in, they didn't have any backup or disaster recovery running either. So, you know, it's kind of the blind leading the blind when it comes to government, but at least there's a thought here. I didn't think it was a big issue as far as lawsuits yet, as far as people suing because their data was breached. Hey, you know what? You really need to have cybersecurity in place. When that dentist said to me, "How can I make money?" I mean, your company's not down and you can continue to make money is really the answer. I mean,
do you have business insurance?
Right.
How do you make money with that?
Exactly. So what are you going to do? Let's get to your calls. We're going to go to Antoinette in Fairfield next. What's going on, Antoinette?
Hi, how are you? I have a question for clarification because you just spoke about it a little bit ago about the cloud.
Yeah.
And I'm having a dispute with my techie son.
You're having a dispute with your techie son. Go for it.
Right. Okay. Because my feeling is I want to get a laptop. And my purpose for that is to do all things transactional on the laptop and not on my desktop.
Yep.
So it won't be hacked. He's saying I'm not understanding the technology. Because my thing is, and you just spoke about it, that if they don't give you access to the cloud, you can't get your information. And I'm always backing up things. Well, right now on the flash drive, I'm thinking about getting a backup unit, you know, separate in addition to the flash drive. And I think I'm on the right, because I'll have three accesses to my information. If the electricity goes out, at least on the laptop, I can get to my documents until they put the electricity back on.
Right. Sure. So your techie son, go ahead. What's he saying?
Yeah, he's just saying I'm not understanding the technology with the cloud.
All right. So the idea of having a separate laptop to do sensitive transactions like banking and financial planning has been recommended by experts for quite a long time. And the reason it's recommended is because we're telling you to only use your laptop to go to the cloud for those things, period. Don't do your banking and then surf the internet for whatever. Because you're going to open yourself to the malware, the keyloggers, the things that are going to capture your credentials when you use that laptop for something else. So that separate laptop is really designed to just be a tool for those sensitive things. Now, sometimes that's not easy for everybody to go out and buy an extra computer to do these things. But that's a way to protect yourself. As long as you hold true to yourself that you're only going to do financial work, things that are sensitive, and nothing else, right? You're not going to go surf or watch TV on your laptop with it.
And turn it off when you're done.
Yeah. So that's what it really is all about. Does that make sense to you, Antoinette?
Yes, it does. One other clarification. Because I'm doing a lot of upkeep on my credentials and they're on Zoom, I was thinking that the Zoom I would only do for that. Would that still be compromising the sensitive data?
Well, Zoom is a third-party cloud application that has had its issues with security.
Okay.
So I would say cautiously you could consider it, but it's not a purist approach to just doing the most sensitive things that you'd want to keep safe, because when you start Zooming out there, then what's your next step? You're going to start Googling. You're going to start doing things on your laptop. So
staying with what I have, or even if I get the laptop, am I still using the same IP address from my internet provider? Because that was a big misunderstanding on my part.
Yes, the internet provider is giving you an IP address, and that's where the planet knows where Antoinette is, right? So when you connect on, you know, you're going to, if you go and try to go shopping, right? In my case, I use Cox, so they think I'm in Rhode Island because of the IP address that I'm given from their system. Same thing for you, you know. Every internet provider provides you an IP address. They are generally a changing IP address. They're not static, so your address will change. So, yes, that is true. What are you worried about?
He was telling that I'm having the same IP address even if I use the laptop. And I'm saying, well, it's a different machine. Wouldn't it be different?
It's a different internal IP address, but not. It's the same external one. So when you go out through your gateway, which is your internet provider's router or your own router, your device on behind the router all have different IP addresses, but the public IP address that you're taking the pathway out is the same one.
Okay, I think that's where I get confused. It's the same one,
right?
So it's still the same IP address even if I'm doing sensitive transactions.
Yes, ma'am, that is true.
So then I'm not really protecting myself.
You are. So, no, again, the whole key to protect yourself is to not use your laptop to do other things other than those sensitive transactions, right?
Okay.
So, yes, your son could go ahead, surf on your network inside your home and get malware into your network that could affect that laptop, right? He could do that to you while the machine is on. But if the machine is off and you're only doing sensitive transactions and then turn the machine off, it's more safe.
Okay.
It's
all
not
righty.
The IP app, right?
Okay.
All right, Antoinette.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Nice. Thank you for calling in. We're going to step out for a quick break, get back to more of your calls. Couple lines open for you. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're here till 11 o'clock. And then coming in at 11, Dr. Alessi will be in. He'll give you a second opinion on your health advice. So stick around for that. And let's get to your calls. You were nice enough to join us. Let's go to Bob in Windsor Locks first. What's going on, Bob?
How are we doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm having problems with somebody accessing my Microsoft Outlook email client.
Oh, boy.
Every couple of weeks, I get a thing that says, when I go into Outlook, I have to put in my password, and it doesn't work. And the password's been changed.
Yikes. Yeah, someone definitely has access to your account, Bob.
How do I prevent that from happening?
You have to enable something called two-factor authentication. So you have to turn that on your Outlook account so that when you change the password, it then hits your, there's a little text that goes to your mobile phone with a number. You key in that number, and now it's that second factor that proves it's you.
Well, my question is, if this has happened more than once, they don't allow you to use the same password. So
no, I don't. I changed the password, and last week I have Cox Cable as my internet provider.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have, I signed up for this Cox tech support, $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So last week when I had the problem with my password being hacked, I contacted my tech support guys and we went in and changed the password.
Yeah.
And yesterday I went into my Outlook and same thing. I know it's been hacked because I don't get any email messages for like 2 days.
Well, yeah, and you try to log into it, and it's the wrong password, right?
Right.
Yeah. So what's happening is the bad guys have got another, are accessing your email as well, and there must be a secondary email. It's called a recovery mailbox that's been configured. So if you've got your primary box, and then the bad guys have put in a recovery email box that's theirs, they're getting a notification and saying, oh, password's been changed, and they're the ones controlling it. So you need to look at that account more closely to see what the recovery mailbox is, besides, because currently the folks who work with you on changing it didn't go into that, I assume. Correct? Does that sound familiar?
Look at the recovery mailbox?
Correct. Many mail systems have a secondary way to recover your account. They're going to ask for another mailbox. So what the bad guys do is they found your email out there, right? Bob@WindsorLocks.com. And they guessed your password originally because your password was 12345, right? Yep. And what they then did was configure the recovery portion of the system to go and tell them every time you try to change it so that they get notified and change it to whatever they want to change it to.
And all these programs like WebRoot and...
That's not going to help you.
I'm wondering if you don't have a keylogger on your computer as well.
That would be worse. Yeah, keylogger would be something that's capturing everything you're doing on your computer, where WebRoot and those tools should prevent that. I think it's more likely that they just guessed your password, or your password was out there because some other service that you used was impacted, and for some reason you kept using the same password for multiple things. Did you do that?
But see, I changed it last week to a password I never used before anywhere.
That's what you should do every time.
And this week, bang, I went into Outlook and it said, please enter your password. And usually I don't have to do that because once I log in my password, it's memorized.
Correct. So then, of course, you put that password in and it didn't work, or did it work?
No, it did not work.
It did not work, yeah. So somebody's changing your password.
The other thing, too, is you might need to go into your control panel and change your Windows password for that account. Because sometimes it'll hold it. Even though you change it in Outlook, it doesn't update it there.
Well, he's not on a domain, though.
Well, that's true.
He's in his home.
I'm on my desktop computer.
Right.
But I'm not in a work... I'm in a work group here.
You're in a domain, correct?
No, I'm in a work group.
Oh, okay.
I didn't join the domain.
Oh, okay. but again, that wouldn't matter for him. So, I think it's your secondary password, that your recovery password that's been... Your recovery email box that's been hit, Bob, if I had to guess. So you want to get on with the folks at Cox and say, hey, how do I change this? How do I turn on two-factor authentication? You're paying them $10 a month.
Right.
They should walk you through doing that, or consider getting rid of that mailbox.
Okay.
It's basically
easier said than done, you know.
I do know, but basically, you have to do a better job of securing it. So, turning on that second factor will be key for you.
Okay.
All right, Bob. Credential manager is what you're thinking. All right. Good luck, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, you got to have two-factor authentication rolling these days. Your recovery mailboxes have to be set up so they're yours. And don't use the same password that you use for other things. If any one of those other things is compromised, they're going to find your password there and say, oh, I wonder if Bob uses this password on his email. Oh, he does. Oh, I get into his email. Now I can read his email. We're going to step out for a quick break. Get back to your calls. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're here till 11 o'clock, and we're happy to take your calls. Feel free to get online, 1-800-966-WTIC-522-WTIC. And let's go to your calls. We're going to go to Chris in Weathersfield first. What's going on, Chris?
Yes, hi. I just wanted to comment on the this Pura, or this Bill 6607. And just to add emphasis to what you said, not only do our lawmakers, they have to be aware of IT in a big way. They have to have a lot of good knowledge,
right?
Because I'm going back to May of 2013. There were three bills, and this was regarding the push led by AT&T. They would profit because they would no longer have to provide basic service to all residents. Instead, be allowed to pick and choose whom they serve. Communication Workers of America, you know, put out in print. Unbelievably, AT&T and their friends at the big and their big cable companies aren't stopping there. They'll also want to prohibit the state from ever regulating digital phone service, which is increasingly replacing regular phones.
Right.
Okay, they were very right. Nobody listened, and now we have what we have. So I just applaud you for saying that our legislative people have to be aware of things happening. And secondly, I believe sometimes the legislative people don't understand government as well, because who is going to be saddled with enforcing these rules? It's Pura. And Pura
hasn't done a very good job, have they?
Yeah, no. And when it comes to securing data, and trust me, because I'm dealing with this this same problem, they're impotent. The law, the bill, and enforcement, they're not in sync.
Sure.
So I'm hoping for good stuff, but
write your legislators.
You're bringing it to people's attention.
Yeah, write your legislators. Give them some input.
Everybody should be doing that, and I would hope that you guys also keep us up to speed as to where those things come from. We have to hear from all people, and you're one of them, because you do such a good job, I believe,
in
educating us all.
I'm doing my best for you, Chris.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. I mean, the issue we have with our legislature is that they're just we need more regular people like me and Bob, and just regular folks serving, you know, and you're only going to get that with term limits, but it's a whole other problem, because there's so many folks who don't know what they're doing serving in the legislature. Why don't you refresh the screen there?
What I just did.
Oh, you did. Okay. Feel free to get online, guys. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. As we're waiting for your call, I have a story to bring up. This is from my favorite tech blog over there in the UK. The headline, Water's Wet, the Pope's Catholic, and iOS is designed to stop folks from switching to Android. This is an epic trial that is happening, where the makers of Fortnite, which is epic, they actually brought out an economist to explain how Apple works. Now, I've talked about this forever, right? I mean, the expense of being in the Apple ecosphere is crazy. And the more that you're hooked into the ecosystem, it is for you to go ahead and go to a different platform, because then you get to buy the thing again, right? So if you're running Fortnite on an iOS or any computer game, and you want to go to a different platform, you got to buy it again. Now, this is true, though, pretty much of all platforms. You know, if I'm running Xbox and I want to buy a game, if I change over to PS, whatever, PlayStation, I have to buy a PlayStation game, right? They're all based on the ecosphere. But there is a huge fight now with Epic against Apple because of the VIG that Apple takes from the developer to offer its game on their platform, usually 30%. That's a pretty hefty VIG. And we'll see what... Go ahead.
I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah, if you want to be on our system, you have to be here. So there, I hope Epic wins. Epic is also suing Google for the exact same thing, this stranglehold. You know, without game, without developers like Epic, what's the point of actually having the platform? You know, you need these developers to bring games to your platforms. You make them so expensive for them to do
it. We can always rely on Apple or Google to give us the apps we want, right?
Yeah.
And they're not going to share our data.
Of course. Well, Apple does a little better job of not sharing our data than Google does.
Well, at least they give us a choice now.
Right. You can opt out. And believe it or not, 95%+ of Apple users opted out, damaging Facebook's model, which is tremendous. So I wish Google would do that too, but Google's model is Facebook model. So Google knows wherever I'm going because I'm using a Pixel. But, you know, this is an interesting battle. I'll put a link up here for you, and you can kind of read what's going on between Apple and Epic. You know, again, describing the way these systems work in these ecospheres you're locked into when you buy an Apple game or a Google game. You're stuck with that platform. You can't switch. You know, you've got all your music locked up in iTunes, right? So if you need to go ahead, if you're done and tired of running on an Apple device, you want to go to Google, you can't port iTunes over to Google. Right, they don't work together. So then you're buying the tunes again, right? At $5 or $6 a tune, or whatever they cost, $3 a tune. But then again, when we were kids, first we bought the cassette, then we bought first we bought the vinyl, if you remember that. Then we bought the cassette. Then we brought the DVD. CD.
But you forgot 8-track.
Of course, I am after 8-track. So vinyl, tape, CD. And now we're buying vinyl again. Sorry. Then you steal from Napster the music for free because you figure you already bought it 3 times and you don't feel bad when Napster gave it to you for free, right? So that's how you justify that. Then you bought the MP3 file and then you bought the vinyl and then you rented it again forever by being part of a music subscription service. So you paid for that music. How many times? I think I probably have paid for Rush Tunes probably 15 times.
Well, I'm sure they thank you for that.
Of course, and I'm happy to do it. But man, they sure have figured out how to get us to buy things over and over and over again, haven't they? But in this case, Apple's also realized that once we've got you hooked in the ecosphere, we want you to stick with us, and you're not going to and to hold you there is how it works. So it's one of those things. Feel free to get online. Let's go right to Rich in Marlboro. Oh, we got to talk about the email hack. Rich in Marlboro first. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing? Good. A couple weeks ago, I had a call from. A large insurance company, we have an annuity, and says somebody tried to steal money from my account.
Oh boy.
Sending in a phony withdrawal form and a canceled check, void check to a bank I don't even deal with my address and everything.
Wow.
And then I called my financial company that I signed up with, and they got an email, and they were almost ready to send them about $48,000.
Yep.
Because they don't require. Sorry, I'm driving. I just got in the car. Okay, sorry. They don't require. You can call up this financial company, just say the local company, and say send me money, and they'll send it to you. They don't require any withdrawal for this. But when I called my local company, they said they got another email using my email address, an AOL account.
Yep.
They said it looked like it was from me saying that I had throat cancer, I can't talk, and they want to send me $48,000 and all
wow.
that. But they had a call just from a large insurance company telling them to stop everything.
Right.
So I had my computer cleaned up and all my all the malware or whatever viruses and taken out, and I only use it to do. I don't open my emails. I only open them on my phone. So it's not getting into my computer. Is that good or?
Number one, your first problem is you're using AOL for email.
Oh yeah.
And okay. your password was probably pretty weak. Right. What was
Correct.
Your password? Yeah. What was your password for your AOL account?
Well, I had some initials, some numbers, and so forth. But I changed it. I changed all my passwords and made them really each one separate, different now. And like I said, I don't know if they can still get in my AOL account. But the whole thing is, I only look at it on my phone. So if they're going to hack in, they're hacking my phone, not my computer. I think.
No, they're not hacking into your phone at all. They're hacking into AOL.
Okay, you're right. But the AOL now, I'm probably going to stop using it. I just have a few people I have to. change, and I've got my Gmail account, so I'm going to use just that, basically.
Right, but your annuity folks need to know that Rich from Marlboro no longer uses that AOL account to ask for money to be sent, right? So if they if you no longer use AOL, but the bad guys still log in as Rich from Marlboro and say, hey, annuity company, send me some money, you know, all that goes out the window. So,
But the annuity account, if I call in or do anything, I have to give them a personal
PIN.
Security, not PIN number, a long one. I could have like 18 numbers on it and letters. And so that's kind of safe now. And also my local company, I told them, I don't want you to ever send me any money from if I mail you something, I have to come in person because it's only 10 miles over to their office. Come in and fill out a form and show my license if you don't know who I am and everything else. But, yeah, this company, I had a friend of mine that I signed up with, this financial company local, and he 6 months ago called up and right over the phone without even emailing him, they sent him money. So that's a poor thing. I'm just advising everybody, don't ever send an email or a phone call requesting money. Do it the hard way so you don't get ripped off.
It's good advice. That's a good advice, and it really is the finance folks who need to stop sending the money. They're the ones that need to be responsible for it.
So if they have my AOL account, can they still get into my computer if I don't open the AOL on my computer?
No. What they're doing is simply reading your email, right? So if you've ever had correspondence with any of your financial companies or any your lawyer, if you have correspondence with anybody that you want to do business with, the bad guys have been reading your email, and they're waiting for Rich and Marlboro to buy a house. Your attorney could correspond to you in the email account, and the bad guys get that email before you do. And the bad guys say, oh, you know, attorney, instead of us moving money around this way, I want you to wire money over here. And they just...
Yeah, send me Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, yeah. or just wire money over here. And now that the attorney thinks it's you, right? So they're not in your computer.
My email again. I got them... even that my financial company doesn't use my... Oh, also, here's another thing. I asked my financial company, can you send me an email... And the insurance company, could you send me an email to my AOL account? It wouldn't come. They had it blocked. But I'm getting other emails. That's really weird. All right.
Well, AOL is a bad use. Bad
I know.
Email
well, I've had that since.
I know.
Time to move on.
Yeah. But again, the issue is people are using too easy passwords. They're using email to conduct too much business. So it's good that you've called in about this and let people know of your experience and almost losing $48,000. And these guys are so nasty that they act like, you know, you have throat cancer, so you can't talk, right? So they even condition it.
It's like one of these Craigslist ads that you call up to buy something and they pay you back. They're on an army base. They're not allowed to use a phone or they have throat cancer or whatever. All this garbage, you know, scammers trying to steal money. You got to be smarter. But like I said,
they're not in your system. They're in the AOL side. Yeah. They're not in your computers necessarily. They're on the AOL side.
So, I mean, the point of this whole thing is be very careful. Change your passwords all the time for your bank accounts where you pay bills and all that. And change them once a month and make them difficult.
And not make them the same. They can't be the same password and turn on two-factor authentication.
And that lady that some of you had on earlier, they were saying to use your computer only. Don't use it to open your emails. Get a little iPad to open them or something like that. Use your computer. That's good, right?
If you're using that one computer to just do your financial transactions, that's all it should be used for. Correct.
Safe.
You can use your other computers for email, whatever else you're going to do. So thanks for calling in.
Have a good day.
You too. It is definitely a dog-eat-dog world out there, and we're all wearing milk-bone underwear, as Norm would say. And you gotta protect yourself, right? Two-factor authentication, stop using free mail systems, don't use the same passwords on your services that you would use. You know, one password per service. If you need a password manager to manage them, make sure you also lock it up with two-factor authentication, or just use... card, physically lock up the cards, but put your passwords on physical cards, because if the passwords are on a card, no one's going to be able to get to them. I know it sounds kind of archaic, but it's a pretty secure way to do it. Two-factor authentication and using Yubico keys are also a good way to do it. You basically have to touch the key when you log into your service. So I have mine on my keychain, And if you're watching on the old stream here, this is a Yubico key. Without this key connected to my computer, when I log in and my finger touching it, you can't get to the account. So the bad guys can't do anything without this key.
So you do your password, the key,
yes,
and your fingerprint.
The fingerprint's a second factor, right, because the key's there. But then, of course, I have to touch it, a little touch here to say.
But if you're doing your password, too, technically, isn't that three-factor?
It's kind of three-factor. This is a really heavy-duty two-factor, this Yubico key. And this is a pretty hack-proof way to protect your stuff. So we're going to step out for a quick break, get to your calls. We'll be right back. And we are back. We're in the final stretch here. Let's get to your calls. Let's go to Ed in Avon. What's going on, Ed?
So I have a GoDaddy account. Mm-hmm. They offer a service where you can purchase or rent a monthly fee, another phone number.
Okay.
And that goes through an app, and I have unlimited data on my phone. I'm wondering if there's any downside to this, because I could have a dedicated line just for my business on my phone. And it would work as good as a phone number, I think.
Yeah, it's called voice over IP.
Okay, so as far as I'm going to dedicate this to my business, no downside, dropping calls or whatever.
Well, okay, so I didn't say it wasn't a downside. So voice over IP means you're getting your dial tone from a server farm. Right. So,
right.
And then it connects over the internet, IP protocol. So the old days of copper, where our analog voices that you're hearing right now go over the copper wire and stay analog, this is going to convert them into IP packets. And so the downside is, if the internet is bogged down or the IP service is bogged down, you could have it could sound like that, and then it catches up. So the downside is you're going to sound bad if they're having problems.
How often does that happen?
Sadly, too often.
If you have it as an app on your phone and you're in an area that doesn't have a good cell service,
right? Good data.
You might not get the phone calls.
There's lots of things.
I'm only using my cell phone anyway, so I wouldn't get a cell phone call either.
Correct.
Yep, that is true.
So comparing this to a cell phone, it's probably just as good.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yep.
Okay.
That's fair.
All right. That gives me confidence. Thank you, fellas.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Yeah, voice over IP is a neat technology, and it allows you to pretty much be anywhere and use that phone number from anywhere. But again, the downside is it's a lot of moving parts, from your internet connection to their internet connection to the service itself, all play a factor in getting you a nice quality signal. I'm not sure we have enough time really to go to Joe here in Watertown. So I want to thank everybody. So Joe, we have to call back next week. I want to thank everybody for being on the program. I want to thank Ashley Zen from the CBIA for talking about the proposed law that's going to shield companies, if they do the right thing with their cybersecurity, from lawsuits if you have a data breach. That was great that you were on, Ashley. Thank you so much. I want to thank Matt for producing. Hey, Matt, I hear we might be in the studio soon, so maybe we'll see you soon, man. I want to thank Mike for putting everything up live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. So we appreciate that. Of course, we've been broadcasting on Facebook Live. We're over there on Facebook. Everything is good into your newsfeed. If you like us at Tab Computer Systems and Mark Zuckerberg deems the news worthy and you're not in Australia, you might get the news.
See you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBnetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.